Hear that? Believe it or not, summer is just around the corner. Luckily, Armor All, America's most trusted auto appearance brand, has what your car needs to get that perfect summer shine. Plus, now through May 31st, we'll give you $5 for every $20 you spend on Armor All products. That means car wash pods, protectant, tire shine, you name it. Find out how to get your $5 rebate at ArmorAll.com. Armor All. Less work, more clean. Terms apply.
Max Verstappen picks up where he left off last year, scoring a dominant victory at the 2024 season opening race in Sakhir. You're listening to the F1 Strategy Report. My name's Michael Laminato, and this is Round 1, the Bahrain Grand Prix. Weekends like these don't come around very often. Pole position, every lap led, fastest lap of the race, and a dominant victory over his teammate and the rest of the field. Max Verstappen was in his element in Bahrain. Pre-season fears of more Red Bull Racing domination appear to have come true. But this is just one circuit of 24, and one of Red Bull Racing's strongest. And Ferrari was quickest in qualifying, despite not pinching pole. Perhaps there's some reason for hope. Further down the order, and the late race show was stolen by an ugly run-in between RB teammates Yuki Tsunoda and Daniel Ricciardo over team orders. But there was a little more than just driver self-interest at play here. So let's take a look at the key moments that decided the Bahrain Grand Prix with freelance F1 journalist Abhishek Takle. Abhishek, it's good to see you again.
Yeah, likewise, Michael. It's been a while. It's great to be back on the strategy report.
Well, I'm very pleased that your return to the F1 paddock can coincide not only with the first race of the season, some interesting talking points, but also a return episode on the strategy report. So it's great to have you on. But let's set the scene for this being the first race of the year. It is always interesting, regardless of how interesting the actual race is, because we do get to uncover whether our assumptions from pre-season testing are true. Bahrain's become the circuit of choice for testing in the last few years due to the weather, and I guess because the first race is here as well. So we have 3 days of testing, then another 3 hours of practice. Does that mean what we get and what we got at the end of the weekend's Bahrain Grand Prix is the most accurate performance picture we can hope for, or is it too particular a circuit and are there too many asterisks to say this is what we've got for 2024?
Yeah, I think it's the latter, Michael, because I mean, everyone's run so many laps at this track in testing that everyone sort of honed their cars so specifically to this track, which as you said, is also not a typical racetrack. It's an atypical track. And now you've got basically setups and are locked in with lots of running for this layout of track. So when teams go into the weekend, they're incredibly dialed in. But, you know, you go to another circuit and they don't have that same sort of running data or that same they haven't run as many laps as they have in Bahrain. So, you know, it can sort of upset the form book a little bit. But, you know, having said that, I think it's, you can't argue the fact that Max Verstappen is well clear of anybody else. So, you know. So in that sense, I would say it's an accurate reflection of what we can expect for the year.
Well, save the pessimism for a few minutes later, because we will be talking about Max Verstappen in a moment. But the atypical nature of this circuit, I mean, I do feel like the longer the calendar's got, the more we've had a tendency to say, well, this circuit is not representative of the other circuits. And we keep writing them off until Max Verstappen's won 10 races in a row, and we have to admit that maybe some of these circuits were typical. But what is extreme about the Bahrain circuit? What is the major challenge of it? Because we've heard a lot over the course of the weekend that it is very particular. It does seem to suit the Red Bull. What is the main challenge in Bahrain?
Well, I think its degradation tends to be pretty high because it's got quite an abrasive surface. So I think that's one of the key factors that they have to take into account when planning sort of the strategy and tire usage and things like that. And of course, tire usage. This weekend we had an interesting sort of, I wouldn't say split of strategies, because well, there was Red Bull and there was everybody else in terms of the tires they carried through into the race, but. And that may well have like been a factor in the gap that Max was able to pull out at the end. But we I guess we'll touch upon that later. But I think yeah, it's just a high deg, high, you know, lots very abrasive tarmac. It's that sort of a track.
So let's talk about that battle at the front. Well, I say battle at the front. It wasn't much of a battle. Normally at this point in the podcast, for people who've been listening for a while, we talk about the race winning moment. I mean, the race-winning moment was pretty much when Max Verstappen pulled off the line. It was a rare Grand Slam, or Grand Chelem, if you prefer the French version, for him. Every lap led, fastest lap of the race from pole position, wins the Grand Prix. Not very many drivers get very many of them, which explains to you how complete a performance this was from Max Verstappen and Red Bull Racing. But you'd be forgiven on Friday night after qualifying for thinking it might not be quite this way, because Max only just pinched pole position from Charles Leclerc. In fact, had Charles Leclerc done his Q2 time in Q3, he'd have had pole position. So that's really on him for getting his timing wrong, I suppose. And yet, when we got to the race, Max Verstappen was pulling out ahead of the field at more than 0.4 seconds a lap. What makes this such a Red Bull Racing track, and why was there such a big difference between qualifying and race performance?
I think, you know, Michael, I think what you said there is absolutely spot on. I think Formula One flattered to deceive, because, you know, throughout practice, you had, well, the three practice sessions, you had three different teams stopping practice. None of them were Red Bull. So, you know, going into the weekend, there was a sense that Max is the clear favorite after testing. But then after practice, you started, you know, practice gave us a little bit of hope. And then qualifying, as you say, Charles Leclerc actually had the fastest time in qualifying. Had he done his Q2 lap, he would have been on pole in Q3. But also, he was the only driver not to improve in Q3. So that again gave us some hope for the weekend. But yeah, isn't every track a Red Bull track? Well, except maybe Singapore. So, I mean, I think it's just Adrian Newey that makes this. What makes any track a Red Bull track, honestly. They just have such an all-round package, and they're just so... They do maybe compromise a little bit in terms of qualifying speed, but their fundamental speed is so fast that they can still get pole with a slightly slow qualifying car. And then the race pace is just on another level. So
it is all about that race pace, and that was really exemplified by the fact that Red Bull was pretty much the only team, well, particularly if we talk about RB, the sister team also standing for Red Bull, to really pull off using two soft tyres over the course of the race. There were a couple of other teams that did it. Alpine did it with Pierre Gasly, but he stopped three times. Logan Sargeant had an atypical race because of the first lap incident, which we might mention a little bit later on. Likewise, Nico Hülkenberg. But it was the two Red Bull cars that really did the main game two-stop strategy with two sets of softs, one set of hards in the middle. None of the other main players, let's say, no one from Ferrari, McLaren, Mercedes, or most of the other teams managed that same strategy with two soft tyres, which really speaks to that race pace advantage. That was one of the extenuating circumstances in the size of the gap. I mean, being able to use two sets of soft tyres means naturally there's a little bit of extra pace there. The clear air factor also plays a role. It meant there was no risk of undercut, first of all, and he could run his optimal stint lengths rather than trying to get in caught on an undercut trap that might actually undo your own race. Are there reasons there, do you think, to be positive, the fact that this was such a perfect set of circumstances for Red Bull? Or does Red Bull kind of make its own positive circumstances here? Is there any hope to be found in this list of circumstances?
I mean, I don't want to sound pessimistic at the start of the year, but the prevailing mood in the paddock after the race on Sunday was pretty much like, yeah, I think the season's done. I mean, Toto Wolff said, you know, we have to brace ourselves for the possibility that Max may well be uncatchable. He said he was in a different, forget different league, he was in a different galaxy altogether. And honestly, like, it's just that because of what I touched upon earlier, like the sort of, they probably compromise a little bit on qualifying pace and have built a better race car. That also means that they're not eating into their tires as much. They're easier on their tires, which also probably allows them to run those stints on the softs. And also remember that the fundamental speed in the car that they have means that. And the low tire deck that they have relative to sort of opposition means that they can extend their stints, they can run soft tires, and they don't even have to push that hard. So the soft tires are not even punishing those soft tires because they're running sort of well within sort of their limits, and that means they can extend, get even more life out of those softs. So I think fundamentally you build a fast race car and it just gives you a lot many more options. So in that sense, you do create your own circumstances to a degree.
So it is a little bit of a pessimistic. I think it's fair to say it's a little bit of a pessimistic situation after the first Bahrain Grand Prix. But yep. I did find it interesting. Fred Vasseur, the team principal of Ferrari, who has a trend, a track record of often looking at things, I think, in a glass half full sort of way. At least that's what we learned about him during that first year as Ferrari team principal last year. He noted, well, you know, last year Ferrari was around 50 seconds behind at the flag. This year is about half, 25 seconds. That's a big improvement year on year. And he did note as well, and based on some of the things we've talked about, this is a very strong Red Bull Racing circuit. This was one of its strongest last season. It had an enormous winning margin. We also saw Ferrari struggle with front brake issues, Mercedes struggle with cooling issues. This is, noting that this is such a strong Red Bull Racing circuit and that those front runners, in particular Ferrari, but perhaps Mercedes, had it not been so hamstrung, seemed closer than they were last year. Do you think that's a reason for hope, Abhishek? Are we digging too deep, looking for something to pin our hopes on?
I mean, yeah, 50 seconds and has been halved to 25 seconds, but 25 seconds is still a country mile behind the race winner. So he's not even going to be sweating it. He's not even going to be able to see the card in his mirrors 25 seconds back. So, you know, unless that 25 seconds goes down to like a second or 2 seconds or 0.3 of a second, dare we hope, you know, I don't think it's, I mean, this is numbers and it's just like false optimism, isn't it? I mean, I know Sainz especially was sort of trying to strike an upbeat. I mean, he got onto the podium, so he was upbeat, but he also tried to strike an upbeat note saying, oh, we finished on the, whatever, 2 or 3 seconds or whatever it was behind a Red Bull. Yeah, but that was Sergio Perez's Red Bull, not the Red Bull you want to be beating.
Yes, I did note those comments as well and thought that they were a little bit needlessly positive considering the margin Max had, but I am hopeful at least that this was a perfect situation for Max. I thought it was interesting, actually, that after the race he noted himself that it's very rare everything felt as good as it did for him over the course of this weekend in Bahrain. We noted, for example, over team radio, I don't think there was any instances of him complaining at all during the race. Plenty during practice, a little bit during qualifying, not so much in the race. So at the moment, I'm willing to take that could be a 50-50 call about whether that means it's going to be like that all year or actually everything fell into alignment on Sunday and maybe we'll have something a little bit closer, at least this weekend in Saudi Arabia. I'm happy, Abhishek, to settle for 2 non-Red Bull wins this year. That's twice as much as last year and we can build from there in future seasons.
So I guess Ferrari's closer, like Fred Vasseur said, so maybe they'll win their first race in Italy and not Singapore.
Well, that's it. One race more, I'm happy to accept that.
Greetings from Evergreen Podcasts. We're rolling out a listener survey and we want to hear from you. The information in the survey will help us gather statistics and in turn make our shows more appealing to advertisers. I know most people don't like ads, but this is one of the only ways our shows make money and help keep their lights on. We promise it will only take a few minutes, but the impact on our podcasts will be tremendous. As a token of our appreciation, we'll randomly select one lucky participant each month to win an exclusive merchandise package from Evergreen Podcasts. Head to evergreenpodcast.com/listenersurvey to help a show and possibly get some free stuff for doing so. We can't thank you enough for the support. Now back to the show.
Now, briefly before we move on to one of the other big talking points from this race, which was RB, not Red Bull, the other, well, it does stand for Red Bull, weirdly enough, but the other Red Bull. I just want to get your sense, having been in the paddock for the first Grand Prix of the season, having seen it all unfold, okay, we understand that Red Bull is the fastest car. I think that's pretty clear at this point. But the composition of that front-running pack, we saw Ferrari finish second, but Ferrari and Mercedes suffering a lot of reliability problems. McLaren ended the weekend sounding a little bit more positive than I expected for a team that didn't seem in the mix for second. And then, well, Aston Martin, Lance Stroll made a lot of progress during the race, having dropped to the back after the first lap and then scoring points. What do you see the breakdown being in that front-running group if we're to look at, I guess, optimistically or not optimistically, who's going to finish second to Red Bull Racing?
I think the picture is a bit muddied, but I think it's either Ferrari or Mercedes, and on the evidence of Bahrain, you'd have to say Ferrari. But the picture on that front was also muddied because, I mean, Mercedes went with 2 separate setups for Hamilton and Russell in qualifying, so we probably didn't see them play or, you know, reveal all of their cards or in terms of pace. I think that's going to be changing around a bit. I think it's going to be Mercedes at some tracks, Ferrari at other tracks. I think we're going to see that sort of chopping and changing. In terms of Aston Martin, Alonso, his sole Q3 lap was quite a treat to watch. Honestly, I mean, it was masterful. I do get the sense it's slightly behind on when it comes to sort of in that mix for best of the rest. And as are McLaren. I mean, McLaren, I would have expected McLaren to be further up given the rate of progress they made over the last season. So I would have expected that rate of progress to continue. So I was a bit underwhelmed by what they did because they obviously were not as bad as last year, which is they were abysmal last year. But I expected more from them. So I think at the moment it's going to be Ferrari and Mercedes battle for second at the end of the day.
All right, let's move out of the points now to really the only major on-track flashpoint of the weekend. It came in the final laps of the Grand Prix, and in fact a little bit after the Grand Prix as well, when Yuki Tsunoda attempted to ignore a team order to let Daniel Ricciardo through to attack Kevin Magnussen in the final laps. He did respond eventually, but by then there were only a handful of laps left in the Grand Prix. Max Verstappen lapped both of them, which broke up that battle pack, and ultimately Ricciardo didn't get past Magnussen. And nor did Tsunoda, obviously, and they finished in that order. Ricciardo had been finishing on a set of soft tyres, as we mentioned earlier, which gave him a faster finish to the end. That was his strategy, not to use them in the first stint like many other drivers. Didn't manage to absolutely fulfil it, though he did make up some positions in that final stint. What's your take on the way this was handled? Team orders are always a little bit ugly, or they have a chance of going a little bit ugly in Formula 1. Yuki Tsunoda appeared to have a bit of a handle on Daniel Ricciardo in race conditions at least. Is this down to team handling, individual driver handling of this incident? What was your read on this?
I think it was a driver disobeying team orders. I think Tsunoda is right to sort of feel a bit aggrieved. Any driver would when handing over a position to a teammate. But the fact is, this wasn't a Fernando is faster than you kind of a team order. This was a purely strategic, we've got strategic sort of team order in the sense that it wasn't favoritism towards one driver. It was, I'm sure they would have made the same call had the positions been reversed and Tsunoda been, fast at that point on soft tyres and chasing down the cars in front. But so I think it was just Tsunoda getting a bit hot on under the collar. We know he feels intensely when he's in the car, when the adrenaline's flowing. We know he can be a bit aggressive on the radio and stuff. But I didn't see any issue with the team order. I think we've seen that with lots of teams where two drivers on a different strategy, you sort of one of them's faster and has a better chance at attacking the cars in front. Yeah, you do move the other car out of the way and give them a shot at, seeing if they can make progress. But I think where the other side of it is, if the car isn't able to make progress, then the orders swap back. But in this case, I mean, it's not like they were in the points anyway. I didn't see why it had to develop into such a big flashpoint. It's like Ricciardo said, we weren't fighting for points anyway, so what does it really matter?
The team handling is something that I think is kind of interesting here. The team has said not only was it discussed before the race, but Yuki was given a couple of laps advanced warning, saying also that if he managed to pass Magnussen, obviously there wouldn't be a team order. It was sort of his last two laps chance to avoid being ordered to let Daniel Ricciardo through. I can kind of understand his frustration on another level, though, because if you look at the race he had, great start, was up to 10th, thanks partly because of Nico Hülkenberg tapping himself out of the race at the first corner, unfortunately for Haas after a great qualifying performance. But then at the first stop was left out many laps too late, was undercut by Lance Stroll, by Zhou Guanyu, then another few laps too late at his second stop was effectively undercut by Kevin Magnussen, emerged just ahead from pit lane but was passed on that subsequent lap and then couldn't get past him. Was it really the team's entire approach to this race that kind of let him down a little bit, without excusing obviously the behaviour and particularly the post-race behaviour when he dive-bombed Daniel Ricciardo into turn 8 in what was, in my opinion, dangerous driving after the flag? But has the team really got a lot to reflect on after this Grand Prix, considering we all thought that RB might be the team knocking on that front-running pack?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, they started off the weekend so strongly. I mean, of course, practice one doesn't mean anything, but it was great to see Ricardo and RB at the top of the timesheet. So I think Sonoda was definitely let down by strategy a little bit, and maybe that played into his aggravation at being ordered to sort of let Ricardo through, because I mean he probably felt the strategy had let him down, and so then the team had no right to sort of ask him to then give up his position for Ricardo when he had instead in fact been let down by the team. So I mean, when you're in the car, I've never been in the car, but you know, I assume when you're in the car, you know, there's so many emotions, there's so much adrenaline, and it's easy to feel these things, and rather than take sort of a more pragmatic view of it. But I think the team's handling of the strategy definitely played into Sonoda's reluctance to move over. Because as you say, it was discussed before the race. These scenarios are often discussed before the race. And in ordinary circumstances, I wouldn't see why he would have any problem moving over. So I think this definitely, the feeling of being let down must have played a part, yeah.
As a final note on this point, and before we wrap this up, there's obviously a great lot of competitive tension, I suppose, at RB between Daniel Ricciardo and Yuki Tsunoda. Not personal tension, at least not yet. Who knows how this one unfolds? But that's because they're both targeting that Red Bull Racing seat currently occupied by Sergio Perez, who is out of contract at the end of the year. No guarantee that seat is up for grabs, of course, but they both know a very strong performance. A comprehensive defeat of their teammate will put them in the frame for that. This can't have been a good reflection on Tsunoda, not just because of the behaviour. Drivers occasionally, you know, for want of a better word, lose their minds in these sorts of circumstances. They're all liable to have one unusual display. But given the fact that one of Tsunoda's weaknesses has been, I guess, really his mental approach over the first 3 years of his career, is this the kind of thing that if you're Red Bull, acknowledging that they've got a lot of other things on their mind at this point in time, are looking at and thinking, well, he hasn't really proved us wrong, our assessments over the first 3 years?
Yeah, exactly. And look, Tsunoda has more to do to prove himself fit for that Red Bull seat than Ricardo does, because tomorrow, if you have to think of a candidate to replace Sergio Perez, Ricardo is going to be your natural choice. So of course he has to of course deliver on track, having been given a second chance within the Red Bull family. But he would be your natural choice, not Tsunoda. So Tsunoda has to sort of work himself into the frame in that sense, you know, for that seat more than Ricardo does. Ricardo has to keep himself in the frame, whereas Tsunoda has to work himself into that frame. So, all of this is probably going to count against him, this sort of outburst. As Ricardo said later, you know, a bit of immaturity, because that's not what Red Bull want in their drivers and senior team. Unless, of course, you're Max Verstappen, then you can do anything you want, but yeah.
Yes, I think that's quite right.
I'm not suggesting Max is immature, but I'm, you know.
He's been allowed to spit the dummy from time to time. I think we all know what you're saying there, and it's absolutely right. An interesting first race, but first races always are in Bahrain, regardless of the result, because we learn so much. If it was round two, we might be saying something a little bit different. But Abhishek, so great to see you again on the Strategy Report, and thanks for joining us.
Oh, it's been a pleasure, Michael. Thank you for having me.
Bahrain painted a picture that's a little bit bleak after the one-sided 2023 campaign, but there are genuine reasons to believe this season can be more competitive. Max Verstappen is the unbackable championship favourite, but from race to race, Ferrari, Mercedes and McLaren can feel confident that their moments will come in 2024. Thanks very much to Abhishek Takle for joining me to debrief the first race of the season, the Bahrain Grand Prix. Subscribe to The Strategy Report wherever you get your favourite podcasts, and if you enjoy the show, we'd love it if you could leave us a rating and a review. The Strategy Report is a Beer Mogul podcast on the Evergreen Podcast Network. Special thanks to Ben Loke from Bloke Designs for the show artwork, and our theme music is by Simon Hosford. My name's Michael Laminato, and I'll catch you next week for the Saudi Arabian Grand Prix. Hey there, my name is Michael Laminato and this is Pit Pass F1, a brand new podcast that'll take you closer to the action of the world's most prestigious motorsport. From Monaco to Miami and Australia to Azerbaijan, Pit Pass F1 is on the ground and has you covered. Esteemed F1 journalists Julianne Serasoli and Chris Medland will take you inside the sport every round. They'll keep you up to date with the latest news breaking in Formula One and the most influential views shaping the world of Grand Prix racing. Every Friday, we'll be bringing you a track guide and race preview, and Chris and Drew will be in your feed every morning from Saturday through to Monday to keep you up to date on all the day's action on and off the track. So if you want to be in the know on the latest in Formula One, subscribe wherever you get your favourite podcasts and visit us at evergreenpodcasts.com. Pit Pass F1, a brand new show for Evergreen Podcasts.